The words of Epictetus, Seneca, and Marcus Aurelius have outlived empires, revolutions, and entire civilizations, and yet they still pierce directly into the mind as if they were written this morning, just for you. In a world overflowing with therapy trends, motivational mantras, and self-help theories, the raw simplicity of Stoic wisdom still cuts through anxiety, fear, and life's chaos in a way that often surpasses the most polished modern psychology. Why? Because the Stoics never tried to promise comfort. They promised clarity. They didn't teach you how to avoid life's storms. They taught you how to walk through them without losing yourself. What you're about to hear are not just historical lines carved into books and marble. They are living principles, practical tools for mastering your mind and your emotions. They were forged in courts, in battlefields, in exile, and in the quiet hours before dawn, when the world is still and the mind faces itself without distraction. And the best part, they work just as well today as they did 2,000 years ago. Each of these 15 meditations is a bridge, connecting the ancient world to your modern life. They are here to teach you not to simply exist, but to endure with strength, to think with precision, and to act with purpose. These are not theories to be admired from a distance. They are to be practiced, lived, and tested in the heat of your daily struggles. So as you listen, don't just nod in agreement. Ask yourself, where in my life does this apply right now? Because if you can take even one of these meditations and turn it into a habit, you won't just change the way you think, you'll change the way you live. You are not what happens to you, you are how you respond. Epictetus. Life will not ask for your permission before it tests you. It will hit you without warning, change your plans without notice, and sometimes shatter the image you had of how things were supposed to be. The Stoics knew this, and Epictetus said it with unshakable clarity. You are not what happens to you. You are how you respond. These words are a lifeline in a world where most people believe their worth and identity are shaped by their circumstances. We live in an age obsessed with control, control over careers, relationships, appearances, even the way others think of us. But the truth is, you can't control life's external events. You can't stop the rain from falling, the economy from shifting, or people from disappointing you. What you can control is your inner posture, the thoughts you choose to entertain, the meaning you choose to give events, and the actions you take next. Two people can face the same disaster. One collapses, the other rises stronger. The difference isn't in the event, it's in the response. Most people let pain, loss, or injustice define them. They start to wear their wounds as their identity. The one who was betrayed, the one who failed, the one who lost everything. But Epictetus reminds us that these things are experiences, not definitions. The moment you decide, this will shape me, not break me, you reclaim your power. The Stoic way is to meet life's blows with composure. Not denial, not numbness, but clarity. Composure doesn't mean pretending you're unaffected. It means refusing to give chaos the keys to your mind. It means standing in the middle of the storm and saying, I decide who I am in this moment. That decision is everything. Because once you realize that nothing outside of you can truly touch your inner freedom, you become untouchable. Think of the people you admire most. Not because they had perfect lives, but because they remained steady when everything around them fell apart. The leader who kept calm under pressure, the friend who stood firm in crisis, the parent who shielded their child's hope in the middle of hardship, that's not luck. That's a trained response. That's a mindset built over years of choosing reason over reaction. Training yourself in this way starts with awareness. The next time something happens, a rude comment, a sudden setback, pause. Notice the first emotional impulse that rises in you. Is it anger, self-pity, panic? Then ask yourself, if I act on this emotion, will it bring me closer to the person I want to be? This single question can change the trajectory of your decisions. And yes, sometimes you will fail. You will react instead of respond. You will let emotions take over. That's fine, if you use it as a lesson. The Stoics never claimed perfection. They practiced self-mastery daily, knowing that every moment of awareness was another step away from being ruled by impulse. In modern psychology, this is called response flexibility, the ability to insert a gap between stimulus and reaction. Epictetus didn't need the term. He simply understood that the gap is freedom. In that space, you can choose dignity over bitterness, patience over rage, clarity over confusion. You can choose the higher road, even when everything in you wants to lash out or retreat. The truth is, this principle changes the game. Once you master it, life stops feeling like something that's happening to you. You stop being a passive character in your own story. You become the author. The circumstances may not be yours to control, but the meaning, the interpretation, and the action, those are yours completely. So the next time life corners you, remember, you are not the storm. You are the captain. And no matter how strong the wind, the captain decides the course. Because you are not what happens to you. You are always how you respond. Control over desires is the beginning of freedom. Seneca. Freedom is a word everyone loves, yet so few truly understand. We think of it as the absence of rules, the ability to do whatever we want, whenever we want. But Seneca knew better. He understood that the deepest prisons are not built from walls and bars. They are built from desires we cannot control. The person who cannot master their wants will never be free, no matter how open the world around them may be. Desire is tricky. It wears many faces. It can be the craving for wealth, status, pleasure, recognition, or even constant comfort. And while none of these things are inherently evil, the moment they control you, you become their servant. You start organizing your entire life around chasing them, fearing their loss, and feeling empty without them. That is not freedom. That is dependence. Seneca saw desire as a chain, light enough at first to go unnoticed, but tightening with every indulgence. At first, you tell yourself you deserve it. You call it a reward. You convince yourself it's harmless. But over time, that reward becomes a need. That need becomes a habit. And that habit becomes a cage. And soon, you are no longer choosing. You are obeying. We live in a world designed to keep us in this cage. Modern life is an endless buffet of temptations, instant entertainment, endless scrolling, quick dopamine hits, easy credit, one-click shopping. Every advertisement is a whisper. You can't be happy without this. And the more we listen, the more we surrender the keys to our own mind. We let desire pull the strings, and we dance like puppets. The Stoic approach flips this completely. Freedom is not getting everything you want, it's wanting less. It's being able to look at something tempting and say, I don't need it. It's the ability to walk away without feeling like you've lost something. That's the kind of strength no one can take from you. But here's the challenge. Controlling desire doesn't mean suppressing every joy in life. It's not about living in cold austerity or rejecting all pleasures. Seneca himself enjoyed the beauty of art, nature, and good conversation. The difference is, he refused to let them own him. He could enjoy them fully without depending on them for peace of mind. That is the balance. To practice this, start with small acts of denial. Skip the unnecessary purchase. Delay the indulgence. Choose water over the soda. Not because you have to, but because you want to remind yourself that you are in control, not the craving. Every time you resist, you strengthen that inner muscle. And just like physical training, it gets easier the more you do it. Over time, you begin to notice something powerful. The more you master your desires, the lighter you feel. You're no longer desperate to grab everything in reach. You're no longer afraid of losing what you have. You start to see how much energy you've been wasting chasing things that never truly filled you. And that energy? You can now invest it into things that last. Character, discipline, purpose. Seneca warned that those who are slaves to desire will never stop being poor, no matter how much they own. Why? Because they will always be chasing the next thing. They live in a constant state of not enough. But when you control desire, you discover an overlooked truth. Contentment is the highest form of wealth. Think about it. How much of your stress comes from wanting something you don't have yet? How much of your disappointment comes from expecting more? How much of your anxiety comes from fearing you'll lose what you already possess? If you could loosen the grip of desire, even just a little, imagine the freedom you'd feel. The world will tell you freedom is doing whatever you want. Seneca would tell you freedom is not needing to do whatever you want. It's having the strength to act from reason, not impulse. It's waking up in the morning and knowing that your peace, your joy, your identity, they're not for sale. So ask yourself, what is the one desire that has the strongest pull on you right now? What would your life look like if it no longer dictated your choices? That's where your work begins. Because control over desires isn't just the beginning of freedom, it is the very foundation of it. And once you taste that kind of freedom, you'll never trade it for anything. Everything we hear is an opinion, not a fact. Marcus Aurelius. The world is loud, louder now than it has ever been. Every screen, every feed, every conversation is overflowing with statements delivered as if they were absolute truth. But Marcus Aurelius offers a reminder that can completely change the way you navigate life. Everything we hear is an opinion, not a fact. It's a simple statement, but in it lies a key to mental freedom. From the moment we wake up, we are bombarded with the judgments of others about politics, success, beauty, morality, happiness. These judgments are often wrapped in certainty, as if disagreement is a sign of ignorance. But Marcus reminds us, what you're hearing is a perspective shaped by someone's experiences, biases, fears, and desires. It's not an ultimate truth, it's just their truth. And that distinction changes everything. Most people never make this separation. They absorb opinions as facts, letting them seep into their worldview unchallenged. A friend says, "That's impossible," and they believe it. A stranger online says, "You're wrong," and they feel doubt. A critic says, "You're not good enough," and they carry that wound for years. But what if you could pause in that moment and remember, this is just their opinion. I choose whether it enters my mind or not. The Stoic approach is not to reject every opinion, but to filter it, to treat it like an item at a marketplace. Examine it, test it, and only take it if it serves you. If someone says something hurtful, you ask, is this actually true? Or is it a reflection of their own perspective, their own frustration, their own limitation? That question alone can save you from carrying unnecessary weight. And here's the beauty of this mindset. It works both ways. Just as you shouldn't blindly accept the opinions of others, you also shouldn't mistake your own opinions for facts. Your views, too, are shaped by your upbringing, your environment, your experiences. When you accept that your beliefs are not the only possible truths, you open yourself to learning, to growth, to seeing the world through new lenses. Marcus Aurelius lived in a world of competing voices: philosophers, politicians, generals, citizens, each convinced they knew what was best. Yet, as an emperor, he understood the danger of reacting to every voice with equal weight. Some advice would be wise, some would be poison, and only by separating opinion from fact could he rule with clarity. In our time, this skill is more essential than ever. Social media thrives on outrage, and outrage thrives on taking opinions as unquestionable truths. News cycles are designed to stir emotion, not to provide balanced perspectives. If you lack the filter Marcus describes, you'll be pulled in 100 directions every day, your mind tossed like a ship without an anchor. Practicing this separation requires discipline. The next time you hear something, especially if it triggers a strong reaction, pause, breathe, ask yourself, is this an objective fact or is it an interpretation? And if it's an interpretation, does it align with reality or with the speaker's personal lens? When you begin to live this way, you take back control of your emotional state. Insults lose their sting because you see them for what they are: expressions of another person's inner world, not measurements of your worth. Praise, too, becomes more balanced. You can appreciate it without letting it inflate your ego, because you know it's also just someone's perspective. This doesn't make you cold, it makes you steady. You become someone who isn't swayed by every wave of opinion, who listens without being ruled, who can engage with different perspectives without feeling attacked. In a world addicted to reaction, that's a rare and powerful strength. And the impact goes beyond emotional resilience. When you see opinions for what they are, you become a better decision maker. You don't rush into choices just because someone said it's the right thing. You weigh, you consider, you test. You become less reactive and more intentional, qualities the Stoics valued above all. So remember Marcus's words the next time you're faced with someone else's certainty. Everything we hear is an opinion, not a fact. The moment you internalize this, you create space between the world's noise and your inner peace. And in that space, you get to choose what shapes you. Because the truth is, no one's opinion can define you unless you hand them the pen. Death is not what we should fear, but failing to truly live. Marcus Aurelius. Death is the shadow that walks with us from the moment we're born. Most people try to avoid thinking about it, as if ignoring its presence will make it disappear. But Marcus Aurelius challenges this instinct with a truth so sharp it cuts through centuries. Death is not what we should fear, but failing to truly live. The enemy is not the end of life. It's reaching that end, having never really lived it. Fear of death has shaped civilizations. It's why people chase legacy, build monuments, cling to youth, and avoid risk. Yet, ironically, this fear often leads to the very thing Marcus warns against: a life unlived. When you fear death, you start playing safe. You postpone dreams. You put off hard decisions until later. You live as if time is a resource you'll never run out of, until you do. The Stoics flipped this thinking. They didn't avoid thoughts of death. They practiced memento mori, remembering mortality, daily. Not to live in despair, but to sharpen their sense of urgency. Death wasn't the villain in their philosophy. Wasted potential was. Lost time was. Regret was. And in their view, the only real tragedy was to wake up every day with life in your hands and do nothing of substance with it. Think about your own life. How many things have you been putting off until the right time? How many conversations have you avoided, trips you've postponed, risks you've delayed, because you believed you had all the time in the world? Marcus would tell you, stop measuring your life by its length. Start measuring it by its depth. Because a long life without true living is just a long death. Living fully doesn't mean chasing constant pleasure or adrenaline. It means being awake to your own existence. It means doing what matters now, not later. It means telling the people you love that you love them today. It means working on your goals before scrolling through distractions. It means noticing the small beauty in the ordinary moments instead of waiting for grand cinematic ones. And here's the paradox. When you stop fearing death, you actually start living better. You stop clinging so tightly to every comfort and instead open yourself to experience. You take more risks, not reckless ones, but meaningful ones. You try new things. You speak your truth more freely. You stop living for the approval of people who won't even remember your name. This perspective also frees you from the petty. When you realize you could be gone tomorrow, you stop wasting your energy on grudges, gossip, and things that drain your spirit. You become more intentional about your time and your company. You start choosing quality over quantity. In relationships, in work, in how you spend your days. The Stoics weren't afraid of the end because they focused entirely on the middle, the part we can actually influence. They saw each day as a complete life in itself, not just a step towards some distant goal. Seneca said, "It is not that we have a short time to live, but that we waste much of it. The waste happens when we confuse existing with living." So how do you truly live? You start by deciding what matters to you and then giving it your best attention. You strip away the trivial. You stop saying someday and start saying now. You treat time like the most valuable currency you have, because it is. Every moment spent with purpose is a victory over the fear of death, because you know you're using your life instead of waiting for it to happen. One day, the final moment will come for all of us. That's not a threat. It's a promise. The question isn't when that moment arrives. The question is, will you meet it as someone who merely existed or someone who truly lived? Marcus's wisdom is a challenge to stop running from the inevitable and start running toward the meaningful. Because death is coming, whether you fear it or not, the real danger is living like you'll never die, until it's too late to start living at all. So don't fear death. Fear the days you waste, the dreams you abandon, the moments you sleepwalk through. Fear reaching the end of your life and realizing you never actually started it. And then live accordingly. He who angers you controls you. Epictetus. Anger feels powerful in the moment. Your heart races, your voice sharpens, your words cut. It feels like you're taking control, asserting yourself, defending your boundaries. But Epictetus saw through this illusion and delivered a truth that's as uncomfortable as it is liberating. He who angers you controls you. The very moment you let someone pull you into anger, you've handed them the strings to your mind. Most people don't realize how much power they give away this way. They think reacting is strength. But in reality, every time you lose your temper, you're letting someone else set the rules. You've let their words, their tone, their behavior dictate your emotional state. And in that moment, you're no longer acting, you're being controlled. The Stoics understood that freedom isn't just about controlling what you do. It's about controlling how you feel. Anger, left unchecked, clouds judgment. It pushes you toward impulsive choices you later regret. It drains energy you could have invested in action. And worst of all, it hands the victory to the very person who provoked you. Think about it. If someone can push a button and instantly make you furious, they own you in that moment. It doesn't matter if they're a stranger cutting you off in traffic, a co-worker undermining you in a meeting, or a loved one pushing your emotional buttons. If they can trigger you, they can control you. And if they can control you often enough, they can shape your behavior without you even realizing it. This is why Epictetus and the other Stoics trained daily to remain calm in the face of provocation, not because they didn't care, but because they refused to give away their sovereignty. They knew that the real battle isn't against the person in front of you. It's against your own impulses. If you can win that battle, no one can truly manipulate you. But mastering this isn't easy. Anger is seductive. It feels righteous. It makes you feel alive. And sometimes it convinces you that without it, you'll be weak. But that's the trick. Anger wants you to believe it's your power when in fact, it's your leash. The way forward is to practice the pause. The moment you feel your chest tighten, your face heat, your voice rising, that's the signal. Breathe, step back, mentally, if not physically. Ask yourself, if I react right now, am I choosing my response or am I being pushed into it? Even a few seconds of awareness can break the chain. The Stoics didn't suppress anger by pretending it didn't exist. They acknowledged it, examined it, and then decided whether it deserved a reaction. Most of the time it didn't. They understood that not every insult needs an answer. Not every challenge needs immediate retaliation. Sometimes silence is the strongest response, not because you're ignoring the offense, but because you refuse to give it control over your state of mind. This doesn't mean you accept injustice or allow disrespect to continue. It means you respond with strategy, not impulse. You act from reason, not rage. You choose the timing, the words, and the manner of your response, not the person who tried to provoke you. The more you practice this, the lighter you become. You stop carrying grudges. You stop replaying conversations in your head, crafting the perfect comeback. You stop wasting hours of your life in imaginary arguments. And you start protecting your focus, your peace, your time. Ask yourself, who has the power to anger me right now? And why do they have that power? Is it because they've earned it? Or because I've handed it over without thinking? The answer will tell you where you need to reclaim your control. Remember, anger is a fire. It can light your way when controlled, but left unchecked, it burns down everything, starting with you. Epictetus's wisdom is a challenge to guard the spark, not let it explode. To keep the match in your hand, not theirs. Because the moment you let someone anger you, you're not in control, they are. And the man who controls himself cannot be controlled by anyone else. True wealth is contentment with little. Seneca. The modern world measures wealth in numbers, bank balances, properties, possessions. But Seneca saw through this illusion long before our skyscrapers and stock markets existed. He wrote, "True wealth is contentment with little." In that short sentence lies a truth that could free millions from the quiet desperation they live in every day. We've been conditioned to believe that happiness is always one step away, just one more raise, one more purchase, one more upgrade. And so, life becomes a treadmill, running faster, chasing harder, yet never truly arriving. You get the thing you wanted, feel a rush of satisfaction, and within days, sometimes hours, the craving returns. This cycle isn't wealth, it's slavery to desire. Seneca understood that real wealth isn't about accumulation, it's about liberation. It's not having the most, it's needing the least. When you're content with little, you can't be manipulated by promises of more. You can't be easily bought, bribed, or seduced by things that don't truly serve you. And most importantly, Your peace doesn't depend on the unpredictable tides of fortune. Think about it. How many people do you know who have far more than they need, yet live with constant anxiety? They fear losing what they have. They compare themselves to others. They're haunted by the feeling that it's still not enough. Contrast that with the rare person who has little, yet wakes up with gratitude, enjoys the simple pleasures, and feels rich in the ways that matter: time, freedom, health, relationships. Which of the two is truly wealthy? The Stoics didn't glorify poverty, but they practiced detachment. Seneca himself was a wealthy man, but he trained his mind to live as if he had less. He would set aside days to eat simple food, wear plain clothes, and remind himself, "This is enough." Why? Because he knew fortune is fickle. If wealth vanished tomorrow, his contentment would remain untouched. That's the kind of security no bank can provide. Contentment with little doesn't mean rejecting ambition or refusing to improve your life. It means knowing where the line is, recognizing when enough has been reached, and refusing to sacrifice peace for excess. It means enjoying what you have now instead of postponing joy until you get more. It's the quiet realization that the best moments in life often cost nothing. A conversation that moves you, a sunset that humbles you, a good meal shared with someone you love. To practice this, start by noticing how often your mind tells you, "I'll be happy when." When you catch that thought, challenge it. Ask yourself, "If I can't be happy with what I have now, what makes me think more will change that?" You'll often realize that the hunger for more is just a habit, not a necessity. Another way is to strip away one unnecessary thing from your life and see how it feels. Skip the upgrade. Delay the purchase. Live without something you thought was essential and watch how quickly you adapt. Each time you do this, you loosen the grip that possessions have on your sense of well-being. And here's the paradox. When you no longer need more, you often find yourself achieving more, because your actions are no longer fueled by desperation, but by clarity. You're not chasing to fill a void. You're building from a place of stability. That's when your work becomes more focused, your relationships more genuine, your decisions more aligned. True wealth isn't measured in the size of your house, but in the size of your contentment. It's not the fullness of your closet, but the fullness of your heart. When you master this, you stop looking at what's missing and start appreciating what's present. And in doing so, you discover that you've been rich all along. You just didn't notice. So ask yourself, if tomorrow I lost half of what I own, could I still live with peace? Could I still find joy? If the answer is no, then it's not your possessions you own, it's your possessions that own you. Seneca's wisdom invites us to flip the definition of wealth on its head, to stop measuring by the things we can count and start measuring by the things we can't: peace, freedom, time, love. Because once you are content with little, you've already taken the first step toward the kind of wealth that no thief, no market crash, no twist of fate can ever take away. Obstacles are opportunities for training, Marcus Aurelius. Most people see obstacles as interruptions, detours that block them from getting where they want to go. They get frustrated, angry, or discouraged, as if the universe has singled them out for misfortune. But Marcus Aurelius, with the calm clarity of a Stoic emperor, flips the perspective entirely. Obstacles are opportunities for training. This isn't just a positive spin on a bad situation. It's a fundamental shift in how you view challenge itself. To Marcus, the obstacle is the path. It's not something to get around. It's something to move through. Because in moving through it, you grow in ways you never could without it. Think about it. Muscles grow through resistance, not ease. A weightlifter doesn't curse the weight for being heavy. He knows the heaviness is the point. The same is true for your character, your discipline, your resilience. Without resistance, they weaken. Without obstacles, they never develop at all. Every time life puts something in your way, it's offering you a chance to train, not just in solving the specific problem, but in strengthening the qualities that will serve you in every part of life. Patience, focus, adaptability, courage, endurance. These aren't built in comfort, they're forged in struggle. Marcus didn't learn this in theory. He ruled during wars, plagues, political betrayals, and personal losses. Every day, problems came to his doorstep that could have broken him. Instead, he trained himself to see each one as material for growth. A political crisis? Training in diplomacy and steadiness. A betrayal? Training in emotional control and forgiveness. A military defeat? Training in strategy and humility. The problem most of us face is that we think life should be smooth, and when it's not, we believe something has gone wrong. But if you expect obstacles, they stop being personal. They stop being unfair. They become part of the workout. You stop asking, "Why me?" and start asking, "How can I use this?" This mindset isn't about pretending pain feels good. It's about recognizing that the pain you don't run from becomes strength. Every obstacle you endure today makes you more prepared for the ones you'll face tomorrow. And the more you train, the less anything can truly shake you. To live this way, you have to reframe your response in the moment. When something blocks your path, pause and think, "This is training. This delay is teaching me patience. This conflict is teaching me communication. This failure is teaching me humility and persistence. The obstacle hasn't stopped me. It's shaping me." Over time, you start to notice something remarkable. What once would have broken you now barely moves you. What once felt like chaos now feels like practice. You become less reactive, more composed, more capable. And because you've trained in adversity, you're able to stay steady in situations that make others crumble. The beauty of Marcus's insight is that it turns life itself into a gym for the soul. Every setback is a new exercise. Every inconvenience, every rejection, every unexpected twist, these are all opportunities to train. And the more you train, the more you realize that nothing is wasted. Even your hardest seasons become raw material for becoming the person you want to be. So ask yourself, what obstacle am I facing right now? And instead of wishing it away, how can I use it? What skill can I develop because of it? What strength will I gain if I endure it well? The truth is, you can't control when obstacles show up, but you can control whether they leave you weaker or stronger. Marcus Aurelius chose the second every time. And if you choose it too, you'll reach a point where you almost welcome the challenge, not because you enjoy the hardship, but because you trust your ability to turn it into growth. Because the obstacle in your way is not the end of the path. It is the path. And walking it will make you stronger than you ever imagined. Mastery over the mind is the greatest victory, Epictetus. Wars have been fought over land, power, and wealth. Kingdoms have risen and fallen. Fortunes have been made and lost. Yet, in the eyes of Epictetus, none of these were the ultimate conquest. The greatest victory, he believed, was mastery over the mind, because without it, no external victory can last, and with it, no external loss can truly defeat you. Most people spend their lives trying to control everything but themselves. They try to control the economy, the weather, the opinions of others, even the behavior of strangers. And in doing so, they exhaust themselves, chasing the impossible, while neglecting the only thing they ever truly had power over, their own thoughts, their own judgments, their own actions. Your mind is the command center of your life. It interprets events, assigns meaning, shapes emotion, and dictates behavior. Two people can face the exact same event. One sees catastrophe, the other sees opportunity. The difference isn't the event, it's the mind interpreting it. And that's why mastery of the mind is the highest form of power. But this mastery doesn't come naturally. The mind, left untrained, will wander. It will attach to every distraction, replay every insult, and chase every desire. It will grab onto fears as if they were certainties, and treat fleeting emotions as eternal truths. If you're not in control, your mind will run you in circles, pulling you deeper into anxiety, anger, and regret. The Stoics understood this, which is why they treated mental discipline like a daily exercise. Epictetus compared the mind to an athlete's body. It must be conditioned, tested, and strengthened. Just as a fighter trains to anticipate and respond to an opponent's moves, you must train your mind to anticipate and respond to life's challenges without losing balance. So how do you begin? The first step is awareness. Most people don't notice their own thoughts. They live in them as if they are reality itself. Mastery begins when you step back and observe. What am I thinking right now? Does this serve me? Is this thought rooted in truth or just fear, ego, or habit? That moment of questioning is the doorway to control. The second step is choice. Once you notice a thought, you decide whether to keep it or discard it. You don't have to believe every story your mind tells you. If a thought weakens you, you replace it with one that strengthens you. If it's self-pity, you swap it for self-responsibility. If it's resentment, you swap it for clarity. You become the gatekeeper of your own mental space. Over time, you learn to master emotional triggers. Someone insults you. You pause before reacting. An unexpected setback hits. You breathe before deciding your next move. Your mind becomes less of a wild horse and more of a trained one. Still powerful, but under your command. This doesn't make you robotic. It makes you intentional. You feel the emotions, but they don't dictate your behavior. The greatest proof of this mastery is composure in chaos. When others panic, you stay calm. When others lash out, you remain steady. People will wonder how you do it, but the truth is simple. You've stopped giving away control of your mind to every external event. And here's the paradox. Once you master your mind, you become freer in every other area of life. You're no longer a prisoner to the opinions of others because their words can't pierce your self-knowledge. You're no longer enslaved by desire because you can choose which impulses to follow. You're no longer destroyed by loss because you know your worth isn't tied to what you own. Epictetus himself was born a slave, yet became one of history's greatest teachers of freedom, not because he escaped his chains, but because he realized they had never touched his mind. That is the victory no tyrant, no misfortune, no betrayal can take from you. So ask yourself, who truly rules my life, me, or my unchecked thoughts? Do I control my mind, or do I let it drag me wherever it wants to go? Every honest answer to those questions reveals the next step in your training. Because in the end, mastery over the mind isn't just the greatest victory. It's the one that makes all other victories possible. Life is short, but it can be wide through action. Seneca. Seneca never sugarcoated reality. Life is short. No matter how long you live, it will feel like a blink when you reach the end. But instead of letting that truth crush him, he offered a challenge. Life is short. but it can be wide through action. The problem is not the length of our days, it's how shallowly we live them. Most people mistake existing for living. They fill their days with habits that keep them breathing, but not growing. They spend hours scrolling, complaining, delaying, waiting for someday to begin. They measure their life by the years they've been alive instead of the depth of what they've done. And then they reach the end, wondering where the time went. Seneca's point is simple yet demanding. You cannot make life longer, but you can make it larger. You can fill it with action that matters, with decisions that change you and those around you. A life measured only by time is forgettable. A life measured by courage, contribution, and creation leaves a mark far beyond the calendar. This doesn't mean recklessness or constant motion. It means living intentionally, choosing to spend your time on what expands you instead of what numbs you. Action is what turns an ordinary day into a meaningful one. Not thinking about change, not wishing for it, acting on it. The Stoics valued action because they understood that thought alone changes nothing. You can read 100 books, plan for years, talk endlessly about your goals, but until you take the first step, your life remains the same size. The act of moving forward, making the call, starting the project, having the conversation, creates width in your life. Think of people whose lives, though short, were wide. Artists who produced masterpieces in a few years. Leaders who inspired nations in a decade. Ordinary individuals who, through consistent acts of kindness or courage, changed their communities. Their influence wasn't the result of long timelines. It was the result of decisive action. The danger is in waiting for the perfect time to act. That time doesn't exist. Every delay is a narrowing of your life's width. Opportunities are fleeting. Moments pass quickly. And if you're always waiting until you feel ready, you'll waste the one resource you can't renew. Time. Seneca often criticized those who acted as if life was a rehearsal. He urged his readers to remember that the clock is always running and that postponing important actions is a form of self-betrayal. If something matters, it must be done now, not someday, not when circumstances are ideal. So, how do you make your life wide? You start by identifying what matters most, not to the world, but to you. Then you prioritize action in that direction every single day. You don't have to take massive leaps. Even small, consistent actions compound into a life of depth and meaning. This also means cutting out what shrinks your life: mindless distractions, toxic relationships, tasks that consume your time without adding value. Every yes to something unimportant is a no to something that could expand your life. And don't forget, width isn't only about achievement, it's also about presence. A wide life is one where you are fully engaged in the moment, when you are with loved ones, in your work, in nature. It's about living in such a way that if your time were to end tomorrow, you would know you didn't waste the moments you were given. So ask yourself, if someone were to measure my life not in years, but in depth, what would they see? Would they see someone who took risks, built things, loved fully, and made an impact? Or someone who was always waiting for later? Seneca's challenge still stands today. You cannot control the length of your life, but you have full control over its width. And every day you choose action over hesitation, you add another layer of richness to your existence. Because in the end, it's not about how long you lived, it's about how deeply. What blocks the way becomes the way. Marcus Aurelius. Marcus Aurelius had a way of turning obstacles into teachers, of seeing roadblocks not as signs to turn back, but as instructions to move forward differently. His words, "What blocks the way becomes the way," are not just a clever phrase. They're a blueprint for transforming frustration into progress. Most people see an obstacle and think, "This shouldn't be happening." They fight it, resent it, try to find a way around it as quickly as possible. But Marcus challenges us to see the obstacle itself as part of the path. The very thing in your way is shaping you for what's ahead. Consider this. When you're faced with a challenge, you have two options. You can see it as a wall that stops you, or as a wall you can climb, break through, or even use as a foundation for something new. The first choice leaves you powerless. The second turns you into a creator. The Stoics believed that nature, life itself, puts obstacles in our path for a reason, not to punish us, but to prepare us. If the road ahead were always smooth, we would grow weak, untested, unready for the inevitable storms. But when we meet resistance, we're forced to think differently, act more strategically, and build strength we didn't know we had. This philosophy turns every difficulty into raw material. The job you didn't get? It pushes you toward a path better aligned with your skills. The relationship that ended? It teaches you self-respect and independence. The injury that slows you down? It trains you in patience and resilience. What blocks you shapes you. Marcus lived this truth daily. As emperor, he faced military invasions, political betrayal, and personal loss. Any one of these could have made him bitter or broken. Instead, he saw them as the work assigned to him by life itself. He didn't just endure them, he used them. Each trial became another layer of discipline, wisdom, and perspective. For us, this means shifting our immediate reaction to obstacles. Instead of asking, "Why me?" we can ask, "How can I use this?" That small change in language turns you from a victim of circumstance into an active participant in your own growth. The beauty of this mindset is that it removes the illusion of wasted time. With this philosophy, no struggle is meaningless. Even failure becomes valuable, because in failing, you gain insight, experience, and humility. You learn what doesn't work, which is often more important than knowing what does. Training yourself to see obstacles as the way also builds adaptability. When you accept that the path is not supposed to be straight, you stop panicking every time it twists. You start expecting challenges and preparing for them. You walk into each day knowing that something will block your way, and instead of being thrown off, you lean into it. This isn't about forced optimism or pretending pain doesn't hurt. It's about recognizing that pain can be a sculptor, chiseling away what's unnecessary, revealing a stronger version of you underneath. You don't have to enjoy the hardship to respect what it can build in you. Here's a simple practice. The next time you face an obstacle, big or small, write it down. Then list three ways it could actually serve you. At first, this will feel forced, but over time, your brain will start to do it automatically. You'll see the use in the difficulty, and the moment you see the use, the obstacle stops feeling like an enemy. So ask yourself now, what's blocking my way today? Is it fear, lack of resources, someone else's decision? And then, how can this become my way? How can it teach me, sharpen me, redirect me? Because Marcus was right. The thing you're fighting against might just be the thing you need most. The sooner you accept that, the sooner you stop running from your challenges and start walking through them with purpose. What blocks the way doesn't just slow you down, it becomes the way forward. And once you embrace that truth, nothing can truly stop you. Do not seek happiness outside yourself. Epictetus. Most people spend their lives chasing happiness like it's a distant prize, something out there, waiting to be found in a person, a job, a city, or a certain number in a bank account. Epictetus dismantled this illusion with one timeless reminder: do not seek happiness outside yourself. If your joy depends on something or someone beyond your control, then you don't have joy. You have dependency. The trap is subtle. We tell ourselves, I'll be happy when I get the promotion, when I find the right partner, when I buy the house, when I achieve the body I want. Each milestone comes and goes, and the happiness, while real, is fleeting. Before long, we've set a new condition, and the chase begins again. Life becomes a series of transactions, trading time and energy now for the promise of contentment later. The problem: all those external things can change or disappear overnight. Jobs end, people leave, markets crash, health shifts. And if your happiness is built on these shifting sands, it will crumble the moment they do. Epictetus and the Stoics understood that lasting happiness has to be rooted in something no one else can touch: your own mind, your own character, your own way of seeing the world. They taught that peace comes not from getting what you want, but from wanting what you already have, and knowing that your sense of worth and joy is not up for negotiation. This doesn't mean you stop striving for improvement or abandon ambition. It means you stop outsourcing your emotional well-being to things you can't fully control. You can still enjoy love, success, beauty, and achievement, but they become additions to your happiness, not its foundation. Imagine walking into a room full of people, each carrying a rope tied to your mood. One person pulls and you feel great. Another pulls and you feel awful. That's what life is like when your happiness lives outside you. You're at the mercy of forces you don't command. But if you take back the rope, you decide how you feel, regardless of what's happening around you. The practice of finding happiness within starts with awareness. Notice the moments when your mood rises or falls based entirely on external events. Did someone's compliment make you feel worthy? Did their criticism make you feel small? Did a purchase make you feel excited, only for the feeling to fade? Each of these is a sign that your happiness is on loan from something outside you. The next step is to build an internal source of joy, habits, values, and perspectives that feed your spirit without relying on external triggers. Gratitude is one of the most powerful of these. When you train your mind to regularly recognize what's already good in your life, you begin to see abundance instead of lack. You realize you already have enough, and that feeling is unshakable because it's generated from within. Self-respect is another anchor. When you consistently act in line with your principles, you create a deep, quiet pride that doesn't need applause to exist. You wake up knowing you're living authentically, and that knowledge alone can sustain you through difficult days. Of course, this is a lifelong practice. The world is constantly trying to convince you that happiness is for sale, hidden in the next achievement, the next relationship, the next possession. And yes, those things can bring moments of joy. But the Stoics remind us that the only joy worth trusting is the kind that remains when those things are gone. So ask yourself, if I lost everything external, my possessions, my titles, my comfort, would I still have a reason to feel peace? Would I still feel that my life has value? If the answer is no, then you've found the work ahead of you. Happiness found outside yourself will always be fragile. Happiness built within yourself is untouchable. That's the kind Epictetus invites us to pursue, not by retreating from the world, but by engaging with it from a place of completeness, not need. Because the day you stop seeking happiness out there is the day you finally realize it was with you all along. Everything is temporary. Don't cling to what fades. Marcus Aurelius. Marcus Aurelius ruled over an empire, commanded armies, and held more power than most of us can imagine. Yet he never forgot one simple, humbling truth. Everything is temporary. Power, beauty, wealth, health, love, even life itself. None of it is permanent. And because it all fades, clinging to it only multiplies your suffering. This is not meant to be a dark or depressing idea. In fact, for Marcus and the Stoics, it was a source of freedom. When you understand the impermanence of all things, you begin to loosen your grip. You stop trying to force what cannot be kept. You stop holding so tightly to moments, people, and possessions that were never truly yours to own in the first place. Look at nature. The seasons change without apology. Flowers bloom and wither. Rivers rise and fall. The sun sets every evening, no matter how much we wish daylight could last longer. Everything moves, shifts, transforms. Why should our lives be any different? The problem arises when we try to resist this natural flow. We cling to relationships long after they've run their course. We chase youth as if age is a crime. We hold on to past achievements as if they define us forever. And when these things inevitably slip away, we feel betrayed, as though life has broken some promise. But life never promised permanence, it only promised change. The Stoic approach is to embrace this truth fully. If you know something is temporary, you can enjoy it more deeply while it's here, instead of wasting the moment fearing its end. Marcus himself wrote about kissing his child goodnight while remembering that tomorrow is never guaranteed, not to take away joy, but to intensify it. Gratitude becomes richer when it's paired with awareness of impermanence. And here's the paradox. The less you cling, the more you can truly experience. If you've ever tried to hold water in your hands, you know that the tighter you grip, the faster it slips away. But if you simply let it rest in your palm, you can feel its coolness, its weight, its presence, for as long as it's meant to be there. Life is the same. This truth applies to hardship as well. Pain, too, is temporary. The heartbreak you feel today will soften. The storm you're in will pass. Remembering that this too shall fade gives you the endurance to keep going, even when the weight feels unbearable. Impermanence is not just the end of joy, it is also the end of suffering. To live by this principle, practice observing change without resistance. When something good happens, savor it fully without grasping. When something bad happens, endure it without despair. Understand that both are passing weather patterns, and you are the sky that holds them. This doesn't mean detaching so much that you feel nothing. It means engaging with life while accepting its terms. It means loving people while knowing you can't keep them forever. It means building things while knowing they might not last. It means living fully now instead of waiting for a permanence that will never come. So ask yourself, what am I holding on to so tightly that it's keeping me from peace? Is it a version of myself from the past? A relationship I've outgrown? An achievement I keep replaying because I'm afraid I'll never match it? And what would happen if I loosened my grip, not to throw it away, but to allow it to be what it is, a temporary chapter in an ever-changing book? Marcus's reminder isn't meant to make you numb, it's meant to make you free. Free to live without the constant fear of loss. Free to love without trying to possess. Free to face change without feeling like your world is collapsing. Everything is temporary, and when you truly accept that, you stop clinging and you start living. Learn to say no to what corrupts your life. Seneca. Seneca's wisdom often cuts straight to the truth we least want to admit. His reminder to learn to say no to what corrupts your life is not just about avoiding obvious dangers, It's about recognizing the subtle, persistent forces that erode your character, your peace, and your purpose. Corruption rarely arrives as a sudden, dramatic collapse. More often, it creeps in quietly, disguised as harmless habits, small compromises, or temporary pleasures that slowly shape who you become. The challenge is that most people are quick to say no to big, obvious threats, but fail to notice the small ones that slip in unnoticed. You might reject a toxic relationship, yet keep around friends who constantly plant seed of doubt. You might swear off destructive addictions, yet allow your time and energy to be drained by endless distractions. You might promise to guard your values, yet bend them slightly when convenience or approval calls. Seneca understood that every yes is also a no to something else. When you say yes to staying up all night scrolling on your phone, you say no to a rested, focused morning. When you say yes to the company of people who mock your goals, you say no to the support of those who would encourage them. When you say yes to comfort, you say no to growth. Every choice either strengthens or corrodes you. Learning to say no is an act of self-respect. It's a declaration that your time, energy, and mental space are not open for anyone or anything to consume. But it's also an act of courage, because saying no often makes people uncomfortable. It can create tension, invite criticism, and even cost you relationships. And that's why so many avoid it. They fear being labeled selfish, arrogant, or too serious. But here's the truth. The people and habits that deserve to be in your life will respect your no, and those that don't respect it are the very ones you need to say it to. The Stoics lived by their principles, not by the shifting approval of the crowd. They measured decisions not by how popular they were, but by whether they aligned with virtue and purpose. Saying no also requires clarity. You can't reject what corrupts you if you don't know what you stand for. What are your non-negotiables? What values are you unwilling to compromise? If you don't decide this in advance, you'll find yourself making the decision in the moment, when pressure, emotion, or temptation are at their strongest. And in those moments, it's far easier to say yes to what you should refuse. This isn't about becoming rigid or joyless. It's about protecting the soil in which your life grows. If you allow weeds, no matter how small or pretty they look at first, to take root, they will eventually choke out what's healthy. Your mind, your habits, your environment, they all need regular pruning. That's what saying no does. It clears space for what truly matters. It's worth remembering that what corrupts your life is not always evil in itself. It can be neutral, even good, in the wrong amount or context. Work is valuable, but overwork can destroy health and relationships. Leisure is refreshing, but too much becomes idleness. Social connection is vital, but constant socializing can drown out solitude and self-reflection. The danger lies in imbalance, and the key to balance is knowing when to refuse. So, how do you start? Begin small. Identify one habit, one commitment, or one influence in your life that you know is eroding your time, energy, or character. Practice saying no to it, even if just for a week. Notice how it feels. At first, it might be uncomfortable. You may even feel guilty. But soon, you'll start to notice something else. Space. Space for better habits, deeper focus, and healthier relationships. Over time, your no becomes a shield. Not a wall that isolates you, but a boundary that defines you. It tells the world and yourself what you will and will not allow into your life. And the more you protect that boundary, the more your life aligns with the person you want to be. Seneca's advice is both simple and demanding. To say no to what corrupts your life, you must first recognize it. Then, you must value your peace more than temporary comfort. your growth more than easy approval. Because every yes you give away without thought is a piece of your future you'll never get back. And when you master the art of saying no, you realize it's not about deprivation, it's about preservation. It's about keeping your life free from the slow, silent decay that comes from letting the wrong things stay too long. Virtue is the only reward that cannot be stolen, Epictetus. In a world obsessed with titles, possessions, and status, Epictetus offers a reminder that strikes at the heart of what truly matters. Virtue is the only reward that cannot be stolen. Everything else you have, your wealth, your career, your reputation, even your health, can be taken away in a moment. But your character, the way you live your values, the moral backbone you've built through your choices, those are untouchable unless you give them away. Most people spend their lives chasing rewards that can vanish. They measure success by visible markers, the car, the house, the followers, the applause. And yes, these things can feel good. They can even be earned through hard work. But they're fragile. An economic downturn, a shift in public opinion, an accident, a betrayal. Any of these can strip away what you've built. If your identity is tied to those things, you're left with nothing when they're gone. Epictetus and the Stoics saw virtue, living in alignment with wisdom, courage, justice, and self-control, as the only true wealth. Why? Because no external force can take it from you. A thief can steal your possessions, but not your integrity. A tyrant can take your freedom, but not your moral clarity. Misfortune can strip away comforts, but it cannot touch the principles you've lived by, unless you let it. Virtue is self-made. It's built in the daily choices no one sees. It's in telling the truth when lying would be easier. In doing what's right when it costs you something. In keeping your word, even when circumstances change. These moments might not make headlines, but they create a life that can't be corrupted by loss or shaken by outside opinion. The Stoics understood that virtue isn't just about morality. It's also the foundation of real stability. When you know your worth is anchored in who you are, not in what you have, you stop living in fear of losing things. You stop making desperate compromises to protect your image or your possessions. You can endure change without crumbling because the core of you remains untouched. This is why Epictetus, who was born a slave and later gained his freedom, could speak with such authority. He knew firsthand that circumstances don't define a person. Character does. Even in chains, he could live with dignity because his virtue was his own. No master could dictate his principles. No hardship could erase his integrity. In our time, it's easy to forget this. Social media amplifies every visible reward while making virtue look invisible, almost irrelevant. But what's unseen is often the most powerful. A life lived with virtue carries a quiet strength, a steadiness that people notice even if they can't explain it. They may not remember your possessions, but they will remember how you treated them, how you stood firm under pressure, how you stayed true to your word. Protecting your virtue requires vigilance. The world will constantly tempt you to trade it for something shiny, money, approval, shortcuts to success. And the trade will always look small in the moment. Just bend your principles a little, just this once. But every compromise chips away at the only reward that can't be stolen. To live by virtue is to choose the long game over instant gratification. It's to value inner peace over outer validation. It's to measure wealth not by what you've acquired, but by the kind of person you've become. And the best part? This wealth grows with use. The more you live your values, the stronger they become. So ask yourself, what am I building that no one can take from me? Am I more focused on protecting my possessions or protecting my principles? If everything I own were gone tomorrow, what would I still carry that proves I've lived well? Epictetus's reminder is a call to shift your focus. Let others chase rewards that fade. Build the one thing that will stand when everything else falls, your virtue. Because when the storms come, and they will, the house built on possessions will collapse. But the one built on character will still be standing. And in the end, that's the only kind of wealth worth having. Inner peace begins within. Marcus Aurelius. Marcus Aurelius reminds us with a truth so simple, yet so often ignored. Inner peace begins within. We live in an age where people chase calm the way others chase wealth, always looking outward, searching for the perfect location, the right people, the ideal circumstances, as if serenity is something you can buy, stumble upon, or inherit. But the Stoics knew better. Peace is not a place you travel to, it is a space you build inside yourself. And if it isn't there, no matter where you go, the storm will follow you. Think about it. How often do we say, "I'll be happy when I get the promotion, when I move to a better city, when I finally meet the right person." But every time we reach that when, the feeling fades. Why? Because peace that depends on external factors is never secure. It's like building a home on shifting sand. The moment conditions change, the foundation cracks. Marcus Aurelius lived this reality at the highest level of power. As Emperor of Rome, he had access to unimaginable wealth, influence, and control. If peace came from the outside, he would have had it in abundance. But he knew that ruling an empire meant constant political turmoil, war, betrayal, and loss. The world around him was unpredictable, often hostile. If he had relied on circumstances for his inner stability, he would have been a prisoner to every crisis. Instead, he turned inward. The Stoic practice was to build a fortress of the mind, a set of principles, disciplines, and habits so strong that no external event could breach them. This wasn't about pretending the world was perfect or ignoring pain. It was about accepting that you can't control the world, but you can control the way you meet it. Inner peace is not the absence of problems. It's the presence of clarity. It's the ability to sit in the middle of chaos and remain grounded because you know who you are, what you value, and what is truly worth your energy. Without that clarity, you'll be pulled in every direction by every demand, every expectation, every opinion. In our world today, distractions are constant. Your phone buzzes, headlines scream, opinions flood your feeds. Everyone seems to have an urgent call for your attention. If you don't have a center, you'll spend your life reacting instead of living. The Stoics would say that's the surest way to lose your freedom, not through chains or prisons, but through the slow erosion of your focus and your calm. Building inner peace starts with self-awareness. You have to be brutally honest about what disturbs you and why. Is it fear of judgment, a need for approval, an attachment to things that are temporary? Once you see the root, you can begin to train your mind to respond differently. Meditation, reflection, journaling. These were the tools of the Stoics, and they remain powerful today. It also requires discipline. Peace is not found by indulging every impulse. It comes from aligning your daily actions with your deepest values. When you live in a way that is consistent with your principles, you eliminate the internal conflict that breeds anxiety. Even in difficulty, you know you've acted with integrity, and that knowledge is deeply stabilizing. Marcus Aurelius didn't wait for Rome to quiet down before finding peace, because Rome never did, and neither will your life, There will always be something to fix, someone to deal with, a new problem waiting. If you postpone peace until the world calms down, you'll be waiting forever. The only solution is to build it now, in the middle of the noise. Imagine your mind as a calm lake. The world will throw stones, some small, some heavy. The goal is not to stop the stones, but to make the water so deep and steady that the ripples fade quickly. That's what inner peace looks like. It's not the fantasy of a life without disturbance. It's the skill of restoring calm, no matter what disturbs it. So ask yourself, what would it take for me to feel steady even if everything around me shook? What habits, what principles, what mindset would I need to strengthen? And most importantly, am I willing to start now, without waiting for the perfect time? Because Marcus Aurelius's wisdom still holds. The only place peace can truly begin, and the only place it can truly last, is within you. Protect that space. Guard it like the most precious thing you own. Because in a world that will never stop moving, that inner stillness will be your anchor, your refuge, and your greatest source of strength. We've walked together through 15 meditations, 15 pieces of wisdom that have survived centuries, crossing empires and oceans, outlasting kings, revolutions, and the rise and fall of entire civilizations. Epictetus, born a slave, taught us that freedom is not given, it's built inside the mind. Seneca, a statesman surrounded by danger and betrayal, reminded us that wealth, power, and comfort mean nothing if we don't master our desires. Marcus Aurelius, the emperor philosopher, showed us that even from the throne of the most powerful empire, peace is only real when it begins within. And as we look at the modern world, overflowing with noise, anxiety, and the endless chase for validation, it's almost shocking how little has changed. The tools may be new, the problems may be dressed differently, but the human mind still wrestles with the same fears, the same impulses, the same longing for control that it cannot have. That's why Stoicism feels timeless, because it speaks directly to what hasn't changed, our nature. But here's the truth. These meditations leave us with: knowing them is nothing. Repeating them, posting them, quoting them, that's nothing. They are not meant to be stored in the library of your mind. They are meant to be lived. Every single one of them is a choice. To control your response, to free yourself from destructive desires, to stop chasing the approval of the world, to face death without fear, to see obstacles as training, to say no to what corrupts you, to guard your peace like it's your life, because it is. These are not easy choices. They require a kind of courage that's quiet, often invisible to the outside world. The courage to let go when it's easier to hold on, the courage to stand alone when the crowd is moving in the opposite direction, the courage to look at your own weaknesses without flinching, and to train them like a warrior trains the body. But here's the reward. When you live this way, you become untouchable in a world that tries every day to shake you. You stop being a slave to every opinion, every shift in fortune, every attack on your peace. You move from being a leaf blown by the wind to being the tree that stands through every storm. And once you've built that strength, life can't take it from you, because it's not built on circumstances, but on character. So here is my invitation to you. Don't try to change everything at once. Choose one meditation from today, just one, and carry it with you this week. Write it down. Repeat it to yourself when you wake up. Hold it in your mind when you face a challenge. Test it in real life. See how it changes your choices, your thoughts, your reactions. And once it's become part of you, add another. Over time, you won't just know Stoicism, you will be Stoicism. The ancient philosophers didn't write these words to impress history. They wrote them to prepare you for life. So start now. Burn away what weakens you. Strengthen what makes you unshakable. Guard your mind like the most valuable fortress you'll ever own. And when the storms of life come, and they will, you'll stand calm, clear, and ready because you've learned what they already knew, that true strength, true freedom, and true peace can only be built within.